Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. I am your host, Sarah, and I am bringing you another author interview this week. I have said it before, but I'm going to say it one more time because I'm so lucky that I get to talk with all of these amazing authors and read their books and bring them to you, and hopefully you will read their books and maybe maybe find a new author or a new genre that you haven't explored before. So today I am talking with Robin Lee about her book, The Idea of You. I will read you the back of the book so you have an idea of what the book is about. It says, Celine Marchand, a 39-year-old owner of an art gallery in Los Angeles, is reluctant to take her daughter, Isabel, to meet her favorite boy band. But since her divorce, she's eager to be closer than ever to Isabel. The last thing Celine expects is to make a connection with one of the members of the world-famous August Moon. Hayes Campbell is clever, winning, confident, and posh, and the attraction is immediate. But he is all of 20 years old. A series of clandestine trysts quickly evolves into a passionate and genuine relationship. Celine and Hayes' journey spans continents as they navigate each other's worlds, from stadium tours to international art fairs to hideaways in Paris and Miami. For Celine, it is a reclaiming of self, as well as a rediscovery of happiness and love. When Celine and Hayes' romance becomes a viral sensation and both she and her daughter become targets of rabid fans and an insatiable media, Celine must face how her romantic life has impacted the lives of those she cares about most. So that is the description on the back of the book of The Idea of You by Robin Lee. And this was a really, really fascinating look into this kind of social construction that we have around relationships and age differences. It flips that idea on its head, how, you know, in society we often see older men and younger women and don't really think anything of it. But when we see older women with younger men, we start to project and we place all of these ideas and thoughts on them and judgments. And so this book is looking at a lot of that. It really takes a good look at that social construction of relationships, that social construction of age differences, how that can look, how that comes across to a variety of different people, what they think. It also looks at the perspective of Celine is 39. She turns 40 in the book, and she does live in Los Angeles. So she lives in this world where looks are so very important, and you're seen differently as a woman the older you get. So it's an exploration of not only relationships, but how the perceptions of women and beauty and age all change as we go through life. And it's just a really, really interesting look into all of that. It's very well done. It's very well written. It is all of those things. What it is not is PG-13. It is a romance, and it's got some pretty good intense, intimate scenes in it. It is pretty heavy on the F-bomb, and I don't say that as a judgment. I just say that to give you a heads up for those of you who, you know, may or may not be comfortable with that sort of thing in your reading. But it is very steamy, it is very intense, but it also is also very well written, and it explores all of those other things that I was just speaking about, all those other tropes, all of those other themes, all of those other issues that we, especially as women, face in our lives as we navigate our lives and we navigate getting older and we navigate relationships. So definitely a good read. Definitely, it's, you know, it's not a lighthearted read in any way. It's a romance, yes, but it really does explore those others. And it is as it said, it takes place on multiple continents, so it is full of travel, and so there's a lot of fun elements in this book, but it also does have those deeper underlying issues. And that is probably enough out of me. I would love for you instead to hear what Robin herself has to say about this book. So let's go ahead and turn to that interview. I spoke with her. She was at home in Los Angeles. She's actually been traveling, so it was very kind of her to take some time out of the time that she had with her family while she was home to speak with me about her book, The Idea of You. So here is that interview. Hi, Robin. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. So before we get started talking about your book, I would love for my listeners to get to know you just a little bit. So whatever you're comfortable sharing, we'd love to hear about you.
Okay, let's see. What am I comfortable sharing? I'm pretty flexible. let's see. I'm from New York. I was born and raised in New York. I am the daughter of immigrant parents from Jamaica, which I think has colored my life and experiences tremendously. I grew up in a very Jamaican household, very traditional, kind of strict, huge British influence. I'm a mix of Jamaican, Chinese, English, Scottish, and Arawak Indian.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it's a lot going on. I grew up in Westchester County, which is a suburb of Manhattan. And then I went to Yale. I have always enjoyed acting and writing. They're two things that have meant a lot to me. But on the car ride up to Yale, my dad said to me, "Don't think we're sending you to Yale to study drama." So I majored in psychology. And then when I graduated from college, that Jamaican mentality of like education kicked in even more. And they said, "Well, you've got an option now. It's either business school or law school." So I made a deal with them that I would apply to law school if I could study acting in New York. And so I was doing that. And I did a lot in that period. I'd started a company with a girlfriend, and we were managing singing groups. And one of the new kids on the block was a producer for a girls group that we were managing at that time. And it's when they were kind of like at the height or just coming down from the height of their fame. And so I was able to experience the music industry and see what it was like to be around that kind of craziness and boy band and that fandom and chaos and just the music industry in general. And it was quite interesting and exciting. I also, I interned for Elle magazine when I was in college, and I spent a year in France and Paris studying and also working for their French offices. I feel like all these things kind of shaped my experiences and my interests. And then I guess I was acting in New York. I went to law school at Columbia. I was doing both simultaneously. And then I graduated from law school, took the bar in New York, and moved to LA and have not looked back. Although I do pay my dues to the New York bar every 2 years. I'm a member of the New York bar just in case anything, you know, falls through and I need a backup plan.
And your parents, you know, they made the deal with you, so they were okay with you then pursuing acting after you graduated?
I think they just wanted me to not be homeless is really right. What it came down to, and they weren't certain that I could make any money doing anything in the arts, and so that was the backup plan. And so all along this time, I was writing. I was doing it for fun. I wrote my first book for myself, handwritten, when I was 14 years old. It was 884 pages. I still have it in my closet.
That's impressive.
It's impressive. And then I started another one when I was 16 years old. And I think I stopped writing that when it got to be about 1,200 pages. And I thought, this is not really going anywhere. But these were just things I did for me. I didn't sit down to actually think, okay, let me see what I can publish until after my first child was born. I was acting at the same time, but with acting, there's so many lulls. It's like a roller coaster ride, and you've got these periods of like you're not doing anything. And if you're a creative person, you need to, I mean, for me anyway, I need to be creating art or doing something with my brain. And acting, you're kind of waiting for permission. You know, it's always a collaborative effort. You're waiting to be hired, and it's a lot goes into getting work. And I love the fact that I could just sit down and write anywhere. So I spent six years working on this novel that I did not sell. And then I kind of shut down after that and thought, okay, I'm done. And for 2 years, I did nothing at all. And then in the spring of 2014, I was hit with this idea. And I thought, I kind of like this. And the more I wrote, the more I thought, and showed it to people early on. It was kind of like, I think I could actually really publish this. But I didn't want to drag it out for 6 years. I was like, I want to do this as quickly as possible, because if it's not going to sell, I don't want to be heartbroken that I've given so much of my time to something again.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So that was the beginning of the idea of you. And I wrote the entire thing in pretty much a year and 3 months, and then got an agent and spent 3 months doing his notes. And 2 weeks later, we sold it.
We're going to hear more from Robin and more about her book, The Idea of You. She's going to talk more about the plot and the characters, but we do have to take our first break of the podcast, so stay tuned and we will be right back. Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. Today I am speaking with author Robin Lee about her book, The Idea of You. Let's get back to that interview. So tell us a little bit about the book itself, about the plot and the characters.
So the story, The Idea of You, is about a woman named Celine Marchand, who is a 39-year-old art dealer in Los Angeles. She's a sophisticated French-American woman. She's divorced. She has a 12-year-old daughter, Isabel. And her daughter is obsessed with this British boy band named August Moon. And Celine takes Isabel to a concert and meet and greet with the band after her husband flakes. He's supposed to take him and doesn't. And at the meet and greet, she meets, you know, the band, and one of the guys in the band falls for her. And he's 20 years old. And they embark on this relationship that affects every aspect of her life. And it's as much a love story as it is a story about ageism and sexism and being a parent and a mother, specifically, and the choices we make and how we put others' happiness above our own. It's about how women, just when they are coming into their power, are often viewed as invisible. As we get older, society has these ideas that we are no longer viable or sexually desirable, or we've lost our value. And I really wanted to explore that. And it also takes a dark look at the underside of celebrity and things people don't often see, and the realization that it can be very intrusive and debilitating just dark to always have to be on, and how much your privacy is compromised when you become a public figure, or you are in love with a public figure and thereby receive some of their I don't want to say glory, but kind of their attention from their celebrity.
It's interesting because it's that flip of the norm that we see in society where, you know, nobody bats an eye if it's a 39-year-old man with a 20-year-old. Or even if they do bat an eye, they're just like, oh, you know, whatever. But it's sort of this big scandal almost when it's the other way around.
Exactly.
And Hayes is an interesting character, the boy band, you know, the boy band character, because he is 20 and yet he's also very mature for his age in some ways.
Yes.
And they find this interesting balance. So was that your idea from the start, was to have this? It seems like it would kind of have to be, you know, that you had this idea to have this relationship with this age difference. Did you start from that point, or did it evolve over time?
It was always going to be an age difference. I kind of tell the story that I was in the spring of 2014. My husband was away on business, and I was up late one night, and I was surfing YouTube, and I came across a video of a band, and there was a boy in the band, a guy, call him a boy, who was absolutely beautiful, but definitely young.
Mm-hmm.
And But it's like one of those faces that kind of just stops in your tracks. And I spent about an hour like Googling him and discovered that he was pretty much half my age, but that he occasionally dated older women. And so that kind of planted the seed. And my husband came back from his business trip and 2 days later, and I told him, I was like, I found the perfect guy. I'm thinking about leaving you and our two kids. But he's 20 and he's in a boy band. How do you feel about that? He was like, you're crazy. But that would make a great book. And he no sooner said it than I thought, oh my goodness, that would. And I could write it because I'd had these experiences. I knew what that life was like. I knew what the darker side of celebrity was like and what it is to be in the spotlight. I knew what it was to spend time with the boy band and the machinations, like the interpersonal relationships between the members, and also just how you are sheltered in some ways and you're living in kind of in a cocoon. And I knew what it was to be a woman getting older and kind of questioning, like, am I still sexually attractive or viable? And how is the world seeing me versus how am I seeing myself? And how is my view of myself shifting because of how the world's view of me is shifting? You know, things like, I think things that we ask ourselves, for me, it's magnified because I'm an actress and I'm here in Los Angeles. And unfortunately, so much of this business relies on how you look and, you know, being sexually attractive or whatever that is. And so I've become very aware of it. I mean, I discuss it with my actor friends all the time. Like you're trying to keep up with a model, an ideal that doesn't exist. It's just difficult. Difficult. The expectation is high. And so I knew what that was like and I wanted to explore it. And I dated guys who were younger than me, but never by this, I mean, you know, no more than like 5 or 7 years younger. Mm-hmm. I've been married for a while now. So for me to date someone, a 20-year-old, you know, it's been 20 years.
Right. It really made me stop and think about the 20-year-olds I know. And I was like, nope, no, thank you. Not that they're not lovely people, but I'm just like, no, they're just a little too young right now.
Right. But then I knew the kind of character I was creating with Selene. I had this very specific idea of this woman that I thought would be compelling and interesting. I didn't know anything about the art world, and it was an industry that had always fascinated me. And I thought, I don't know, there's something mysterious and alluring about it. And I thought, if I could explore this world as thoroughly as possible and put her in it and find a way to put her in it, I think that might be the right way to go about this. And so once I did that and I figured out who she was going to be, like, I had to make him a man that could hold her interests. Mm-hmm. And so enough that, you know, he was famous and attractive. He had to be intelligent. He had to be bred a certain way. He had to be interesting. He had to be sophisticated and have sophisticated tastes and be able to hold his own in conversations and things that, you know, that he thought about and so forth. And I think I was able to do that successfully with him and still make him real. And, you know, and every once in a while that you see the 20-year-old come out. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it was a lot of fun creating him. I had a really good time with him. Sorry. Okay. You were going to say something?
Oh, no, it's okay. I was just thinking, as you were talking about Selene being part of the art world, that was one of my questions as I was reading through the book was, you know, if that was something that was part of your life, if you were interested in art, and also how much of that, so since you mentioned that you didn't know a lot about that world and you wanted to put her in that world, how much research did you do? You know, are the artists that she works with real artists that you researched, or are some of them fiction? How did that work?
So I did a good deal of research. I knew very, very little about the art world. I mean, I took, you know, an art history class in college 20 something years ago. But I didn't know it. I knew very little about contemporary art. I knew some big named artists, obviously, but I didn't know how the day-to-day or the business or the industry or about festivals or any of it and the price points and what is considered a value and what's not. And when I first started writing, my daughter was in preschool And I was talking to another mom and I was telling her I was writing this book. And I was like, I think I wound up in the art world. And my woman owns a gallery. And the mother goes, I own a gallery. And I was like, you're kidding me. And she said, where's your character's gallery? And I told her, she's like, that's where my gallery is. Like literally it was on the same block.
Oh, wow.
A couple of years, a year prior, I'd gone to an art exhibit at Bloom and Poe, which is this very big art gallery. They've got, they're in New York, LA, where else? Maybe Japan, maybe London. I can't remember. But there, I'd gone to a gallery, a friend's opening an exhibit, and it was such an eclectic group of people that I could not get enough of. Like everyone is very individual and unique and interestingly dressed. And it was just like this other world that existed. And I thought this was very, very, very cool. And they have some of these things called art walks. Like it's every, I guess it's the first, oh, I used to know this when I was writing. I knew this. I think it might be the first Saturday night of the month is when new exhibits open. And so a bunch of galleries will open, will have their openings then. And so people come in and they go from gallery to gallery and you're drinking wine, you're moseying, you're looking at art. And it was like this other world that I did not know about. And so I thought, well, that's where I'll put Solène's gallery. And it turned out my friend's gallery was there as well. And so she said, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. So often when I see the art world portrayed in literature or television or films, it's done incorrectly. And she said, if you do this, I'm going, she's like, you know me and I know you and I'm going to make certain that your book is true to what the art world really is. And she was a huge help. And I said, I don't even know where to start asking questions. So give me a few months to like read as much as I can, do as much research as I can. So I can come in with like a base, you know, level of knowledge. And so that's what we did. And I read a lot and then I came in with specific questions and she was very helpful and she took a couple of passes of the script and would be like, I wouldn't use this term, you would use this term, or like, I wouldn't use this gallery, so forth. So it was good. All the artists that I mentioned, like at shows, at the bigger fairs are real. Solène's artists are all fictional with the exception of maybe four that I mentioned who were actual friends of mine who were artists who I was able to get their permission to use their name and their work.
Oh, that's great.
It was so lovely to get to know this world that I'd admired from afar but knew nothing about and to explore that. And it was one of the perks, I think, of writing this book is gaining insight into something else completely different. And all I could think of is, I should have done this. I should have done this with my life. Travel the world and, you know, spoken different languages and, you know, been able to do that.
If I'm honest with myself, I think that every time I interview an author, I speak with them and I'm like, man, I wish I did that. I wish I'd done what she'd done or he'd done and lived that life. So I kind of maybe a little bit understand what she's talking about there. We do have to take our second break of the podcast, but there's more to come with my interview with Robin Lee. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. We are about to conclude my interview with author Robin Lee. Her book is The Idea of You, and let's go back to the interview. Each chapter takes place in a different location, and Solène speaks how many languages? At least four, maybe in a smattering of more. Do you travel? Do you speak other languages?
I'm fluent in French. I used to live in France. I lived in Paris for a year, as I'd mentioned. And I worked at a French company. And so I'm a huge Francophile and it's always been a part of me, I suppose. And I decided that when I had kids, I was going to raise them bilingually because I could, and I wanted them to learn it young. I'm not always good about that, but it's much easier to speak to them in a foreign language right up to the point that they start arguing and wanting to negotiate with you.
I can imagine.
And you flip to English really quickly. we go to France often and I'm fluent in French. So I have that and I have some Italian. I used to speak it much better than I do now. But I travel a lot. I love to travel and I think also from being from another place and seeing, I mean, having my parents being from Jamaica and seeing the world differently and more like, I guess, a more international perspective is something that I've always, I think it's just a huge part of me. Like I want to be a citizen of the world. And I'd visited most of the places in the book before I'd even started writing. And so I knew I could use those places as locations. And then others I researched.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier, you know, that you like to be able to write during your breaks from acting and that you can, you know, it gives you something creative to do. How do you find that writing or acting influences your writing? Do you see any crossover in your two careers?
I think, yes, I do. And it's very interesting because they're very, I approach them quite differently. I mean, acting, you're very much in your body and writing, you're all in your head. But I feel like there are techniques that I've learned for acting that is that have made me a better writer. One is an affinity for dialogue and knowing when something feels right and it doesn't in speech patterns and how conversations flow. I definitely read out loud to myself as I'm writing. I'll read a scene over and over, a line, a sentence, a fragment, dialogue. I'm not acting it out, but I'm just saying it over and over again so that I can hear it. So I feel like I have a good ear for that. I also have a good ear for meter and like the rhythm of writing. I think that's from like studying people like Shakespeare or David Mamet, and you have these different playwrights that you study and you over and over, you're learning the importance of meter. And I think that kind of rhythm comes from the theater. And I think that definitely I employ in my writing. And then we have something in acting we call sense memory, which is when you rely on memory, a specific memory and some kind of sensorial, something specific in the sensorial, how do I phrase this correctly? Something sensorial that you remember to help you remember that exact memory, and you rely on that to bring it to life for you in the present. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. And so like, we do these exercises where we remember something typically traumatic from our past. Let's say you were bullied as a child and you have one specific example when one day you're on the playground and whatever it was, and some kid who said something and pushed you down in the dirt and the kids laughing at you and taunting you. And what you remember is, let's say, the feel of your skinned knee in that dirt. And you kind of go to that and you remember it. And so you're trying to recall these things that you can use them in a scene that's current. And the ability to remember things like that sensorially, I think, lends to interesting writing and the way that writers kind of, we go into a room when we make observations and we take things in, but we don't necessarily hold on to the sense, like the smells, the sounds, the tastes, the touch, all that stuff. As actors, we kind of lock all that away. You're taught actors never forget, and you try to remember everything, and then you try to bring it back up. I feel like I use that more in writing than I guess writers who would not have an acting background. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it actually sounds a little bit like Hayes' character, because that comes up a bit, that he remembers everything.
Right.
So that's what that reminded me of. In terms of your writing process, do you like to keep to a schedule when you are writing? Do you have a favorite place to write?
No, I'm all over the place. When I'm writing, I can be very obsessive and I write around the clock when I can. Meaning I take my laptop with me everywhere and I write at Starbucks and I write in my car while I'm waiting for my kids to finish gymnastics practice, whatever, water polo. I take it with me to their doctor's appointments and write in waiting rooms. I stay up to ungodly hours of the morning writing, and then I wake up early and I start all over again. And there is not one favorite place. But then I also go through long periods when I don't write, and I know I should be writing every day, but I can't, life gets in the way and I don't have anything that I feel is really, really, pertinent at the moment. And, you know, sometimes I'll have a few documents open at all points of time that I can open it up and write down some notes, and I'll come back to this, or I'll just write a paragraph or a bit of a conversation, whatever. But I don't feel like I have to sit down in front of that document and write for an hour straight if it's not coming to me.
Mm-hmm. Are you working on anything right now?
I'm working on a few different things, but they're all kind of early.
Yeah.
And I'm not ready to talk about them yet.
Yeah. Okay. You know, in all of your free time, it sounds like you have so much free time. Do you like to read? And if so, do you have favorite genres or authors?
I love to read. I don't have very much free time, but I do love to read. And I read a lot of literary fiction and women's fiction. I love books about this search for identity, I think, and how identity intersects with race and class and culture. I love books like Arundhati Roy's The God of Small Things, let's say, or Curtis Sittenfeld's Prep, or Zadie Smith's White Teeth. Like, I love seeing the world through different perspectives and seeing characters, typically female characters, but I'm open to male. I can be open to male. exploring the world and seeing it through their eyes, like someone, especially someone who's not like me and who's growing up with a completely different experience. Mm-hmm. Those are the books that are really, that always pull me in. I love great love stories, like, but they don't, for me, it doesn't have to have it doesn't have to be formulaic. It doesn't have to be a happy ending to be a great love story to me. Like something like Ian McEwan's Atonement, let's say, mm-hmm. which I loved, and, you know, I was devastated, but it was beautiful and powerful and stuck with me for a long time. I felt that way too about like The Time Traveler's Wife. And sometimes they're just, I don't know, characters that relationships that you hold on to. I'm thinking right now of Lionel Shriver's book, We Need to Talk About Kevin. And I never saw the movie, but the book was so powerful to me. And I just felt for this woman, this mother, and the relationship with her child and her troubled son and the daughter and the husband and all that. Like, those stories just kind of resonate and stick with things that like stick with me for a long time are the ones that I really love. I'm trying to think of a good love story recently. Of Fates and Furies, Lauren Groff. Mm-hmm. That was a great one that I read recently. And then there's like lighter fare that I like as well. I feel like I'm all over the place. I like to read.
That's great.
I like to see different perspectives.
Do you read with your kids?
Not as much as I used to. I did a lot when they were little, but mm-hmm. we're trying to get them to do more independent reading. My kids are 8 and 12 now, so they're reading on their own. So,
do they have any favorites that you know of? I'm totally nosy right now. I just love knowing what other people are reading.
John was really, really, really into the Wimpy Kid mm-hmm. series. He still is. My daughter was just telling me something. A new series she's into. It's got the word dog in it. It's David Pilkey. I can never remember this guy's last name. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of what else they read. They loved Wonder. They love the writer, and I'm going to get her name wrong, so I'm not even going to try, actually. She wrote Smile.
Okay.
Renee Tellum Garden or something like that. She wrote Smile, and she wrote another one, Sisters, maybe. Mm-hmm. She has a third one. They love her books.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Where can people find you on social media?
I am very, very active on social media. You can find me on Twitter at Robin Lee, which is RobinLee, or on Instagram at Robin Lee as well. And Facebook, I'm The Robin Lee, RobinLee. There's actually a Facebook page for The Idea of You, because there's been a pretty large a group of fans of the book. And there's a private Facebook, a closed group for The Idea of You as well. And you're welcome to just send a request. And unless you're a serial killer, you'll probably get in.
Okay, good to know. Serial killers need not apply.
Yes. And on Goodreads. I'm on Goodreads as well.
Okay.
But I'm pretty active, and I read all my messages, and I'm pretty good about getting back to people. Okay. So
do you have a website, an author website?
It's robinlee.com. Okay. RobinLee.
Perfect. And is there anything, as we're wrapping up, anything else that you would like for people to know about your book or about, just about your book?
About my book. Let's see. I think it's, in this experience of writing, it's so interesting because I feel like I've gotten, the response has been different than I expected in the way that people have been asking for a sequel. Mm. And I wrote this book as a standalone. It was never meant to be a series.
Right.
But the demand has been so great that I've started thinking about it and outlining a little bit and writing down little bits here and there. I don't know whether or not that's going to happen.
Okay.
Entirely, but that's kind of where I am.
Intrigued to know where you would go with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I find it flattering that people have connected so much with these characters that they don't want to let go of them.
They're absolutely not me.
And I feel really kind of, I guess, lucky or happy and that's the case, because I definitely fell in love with them, and it was a very obsessive thing for me for about a year and a half, and emotionally a huge roller coaster of having these people live in my head and experiencing everything they were experiencing as they were experiencing it and feeling as if I was in this relationship with them. And I think that people should go into the book. I don't like to give away too much. I think you need to go with an open mind and mm-hmm. then see where the journey takes you.
Yeah. Well, I really, really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're very busy, and I know that you are home with your family, so I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and talk to me about your book, and just good luck with writing whatever you're working on right now.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, I want to thank my guest, Robin Lee, author of The Idea of You. You should definitely check this book out. It is, as I said, romance, but it also so compelling in its character development and in its examination of relationships and the roles of women and the perceptions of women and relationships in general. And so I highly encourage you to check it out if it's something that you're interested in. As always, you can find all of our podcasts at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram, GSMC Book Review. We would love to hear from you. And you can download the podcast on iTunes, on our website. You can listen to it on our website. You can download it on SoundCloud, Stitcher, all of those apps that you use on your mobile devices. You can find us there. So thank you, as always, for joining me. I hope you will join me again next week when I am not 100% sure that I will have another guest. I am working on a return guest to the podcast, which I'm really excited about. It is going to happen. I think it will be next week. We just have to see if our schedules can mesh up. I'm not going to give it away because I don't want to then have to come back next week and say, no, I lied. That's not really what we're doing this week. So hopefully next week, return author to the podcast. In the meantime, go out there and get yourself lost in a good book. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.